Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I believe it's Tuesday. I got to check. Matt Rothschild, is it Tuesday?
It's Tuesday, Michael. It's good to see you.
Well, let's make sure we can hear everybody. Welcome to Tuesday, the big Tuesday edition. Matt, I appreciate you joining me, man. I've had a busy calendar these last couple days, but let's talk some politics, my friend. Want to start in our backyard? Tommy Thompson, he's not running for the governor of the great state of Wisconsin. How dare he not run? I was looking forward to it. I thought it'd be exciting.
Well, I think it was a smart move by Tommy not to run. I thought it was a stupid move of him to go down to Mar-a-Lago and kiss Trump's ring or whatever. And he didn't need to debase himself that way. But I didn't think Tommy was going to win in the Republican primary. I thought, as I think I mentioned to you once before, I think he had a better shot at winning the general than he did in the Republican primary. I think it's going to come down to Rebecca Clayfish and actually Rampton. I mean, there is a possibility that Clayfish and Nicholson, with Nicholson, all of the E-line money he's got, throwing ads all over the place, that Clayfish and Nicholson could kind of split the traditional Republican base, and Rampton would get the crazy vote. And how big is the crazy vote? That's the big X question coming into the Republican primary in August.
I'd say it's substantial.
It's not small, I can tell you that.
So right here in the great state of Wisconsin, the four-time former governor, Tommy Thompson, had been publicly considering this run and traveled to Mar-a-Lago for those, you know, that weren't watching as closely as I was. And I was excited about this prospect, mostly just to stir up the race, to stir the pot, you know, get out the popcorn. Let's have a good time. But Thompson apparently polled the family. And the family said, don't run, Tommy, don't run. And Tommy Thompson said, well, you know, how can you effectively run for governor if your wife's against it and your kids are against it? And I said, well, let me tell you, Tommy.
And how'd that work out?
Not so well, not successfully. But anyway, so Tommy's not in the race. What about this Michaels guy, the builder? Some businessman, a self-funder, if you will.
Yeah, you know, he's been flirting with it on and off. I don't think he's going to be a big player. Clayfish, I mean, the safe money's on Clayfish. You know, she's got all the endorsements. She's got Robin Voss. She's got the Walker people.
Eventually, she'll get right-wing talk radio, probably.
I was on her website today. She's got Grover Norquist, who wants to, you know, drown government in the bathtub. And so she's got all her credentials and all her endorsements. And she's been spending money in the elections, supporting candidates for the state assembly and the state senate. So the traditional Republican electeds and Republican elites love her. The question is, who's going to turn out, though? And in partisan primaries, the people who turn out are the ideologues. And the ideologues in the Republican Party right now are in Trump land, which means they're in Rampton land. And so that's going to be a potential problem for her.
I just don't see how Rantham's candidacy is plausible. I mean, I get it. I've seen some of the statistics. And if you're unfamiliar, we got a guy who is running entirely on, predicated on overturning the 2020 election. That's the Ram Jam, the Tim Rantham character we keep mentioning.
Tim Time, that's what he calls it.
Tim Time, it's Tim Time. Tim's time to lose, I would say. But then you look at polling. I gave my youngest kid a hard time the other day. He's like, well, Dad, are you against Republicans? I said, no, not in and of itself. It's not the Republican part I disagree with. It's the part that they haven't stopped litigating the last election. The 2020 election, and when you look, like 45% of Republicans strongly agree that it was rigged and stolen, and like another 30% say, some would agree with that statement. That's like 75% of the Republican Party is still trying to relitigate 2020, Matt.
And that's
the part I disagree with.
That's the choir anthem singing to, though. And those folks may come out and vote. And if there are two people with a lot of money in the middle lane of the Republican Party and one guy way out in right field like Rampton, you know, it's possible he could squeak through.
Now, Tony Evers, the Democratic governor of the great state of Wisconsin, he'd love to run against Ram Jam, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, let's run against Trump and the rigging of the last election.
And I'm sure Evers would win that. I'm not sure Evers would beat Rebecca Clayfish, especially this year with Biden's numbers so low. It's just a huge headwind that Evers is going to be running into. His numbers were up in the last Marquette Law School poll. But, you know, it's going to be a hard time for Democrats wherever they're running. And Rebecca Clayfish, who can present well, can appeal to suburban moms.
She's telegenic. She was a news anchor, effectively, for Channel 12, I believe, for years. I mean, she's got a history of speaking for a living and doing so in front of TV cameras.
Yeah, I don't underestimate her, and I don't think anyone should. It's not going to be an easy race for Tony Evers against her. Against Rampton, I think he'd mop the floor.
Now, Nicholson offers quite a wild card. I look at Nicholson. Clayfish is the one that scares me. You know, if I'm rooting for Tony, and I'd like to think I am, then Clayfish, I think, poses the greatest threat. I think Thompson could have, and you and I maybe disagreed, but Tommy's out, so he's not the candidate.
No, Tommy would have been a tough candidate in the general.
Nicholson, I cannot find a good reason to support Kevin Nicholson. Other than the fact he's got a rich sugar daddy buying ads and getting him name recognition, what? Why? Why Nicholson? Can you play devil's advocate for just a minute, Matt Rothschild? Why Kevin Nicholson? What good reason would any Republican? He's handsome, he's a former Marine, but he's a former Democrat who spoke at the DNC.
Yeah, I don't get the Nicholson thing either. Obviously, he's an ambitious person who somehow weaseled his way into Richard Eline's pocket. But
look, I need a sugar daddy.
Who doesn't? But I was at Nicholson's website today, and he says if he's elected, he wants to sue public universities under the Civil Rights Act if they're teaching critical race theory. He's jumping all over the critical race theory bandwagon. He's that kind of an opportunist.
Do you perceive him as a serious candidate?
If he
threaded the needle and he won the Republican primary, I think Tony Evers, I mean, I guess compared to Tony, Tony's, you know, aging. He's 70, I believe, approximately. Nicholson would be, what, a strapping late 30s, early 40s kind of guy. So there'd be a contrast, old versus new. And I know that Nicholson's trying to be the outsider, even within his own party, seeking, you know, don't give an endorsement to asking the Republican Party. They've got their convention in May. And he asked the party, don't give an endorsement before the primary. And I think that's logical. But if you do, please endorse me.
Explain both sides there. Again, if he happens to win the nomination, and I don't think he's likely to, I think it's Clayfish's to lose, but with the possibility of Rampton. If you like long odds, I'd put money on Rampton, not Nicholson. But look, if Nicholson managed to do it, and this is a bad political season for Democrats, you know, he'd still have a shot. I think Evers would win, though. Not sure about Rebecca Clayfish, though.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got to find Code Devil all through the 3 o'clock hour. Matt Rothschild, he answered the call. He is Batman, the vigilante of good governance. He is the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. I'm doing all that by memory. That's pretty good.
I like
Batman.
It. It's good.
Did you hear the newest news at thehill.com? Joe Biden is in it to win it. Joe Biden's running again. And I think it's a little early to make an announcement of that sort. He didn't make a public, you know, promise he's running, but he apparently told his old boss, Obama, and now it's being reported at The Hill, and he apparently thinks he's the only one that can beat Donald Trump. Joe thinks Joe is the only one that can beat Donald Trump, and if Trump's running again, apparently he is, and if he runs, he's probably the presumptive Republican nominee, then we're going to have a matchup of 2020 all over again, at least if Joe Biden gets his way. Do you see the logic? Do you see the wisdom of a Joe Biden candidacy in 2024.
I see the wisdom of the announcement that he's running. I don't see the wisdom of him actually running in 2024.
But if it's not Joe, it's chaos. Is it not for the Democratic side?
Well, the question is whether Biden's going to be the best candidate for the Democrats in 2024. You know, he's old already. He's acting old already. Is he going to be acting any younger 2 years from now? That seems unlikely. There are, you know, so Kamala Harris would run. Elizabeth Warren would probably run. Pete Buttigieg would probably run. I think there's some buyer's remorse on Biden, as we're seeing in these poll numbers. I mean, he's down in the mid-30s, for God's sakes. Hard for me to see how he's going to bounce back tremendously, though it might happen. But I think America wants different choices. I actually think America wanted different choices last time around. And to have a replay of Trump and Biden with candidates they didn't like the last time around going at it round two, I just don't, you know, it's not like it's going to be Ali Frazier round two.
But you could say they didn't want Joe Biden. And I readily admit Joe Biden was not my first choice. But I, like 81 million other Americans, voted for Joe Biden in record numbers, that at least on election day, and I have no doubt that voting against Donald Trump was a big part, but enough people had confidence in Joe Biden, 81 million. That's a big number, Matt.
It was huge turnout on both sides. I'm not convinced Trump's going to be the candidate on the other side, but I, you know, a lot of those folks who voted for Biden obviously aren't supporting him if you look at the polls. And so what's going on there? You know, people are mad about the price of food and price of gas. I get that. I actually like the way Biden's governed for the most part. I think he's handled the economy real well. I think he handled COVID real well. I think he's handled his Ukraine crisis real well. He's been more progressive than I thought he'd be on the packages he brought forward. So I don't have a tremendous problem with him right now. But, you know, I can read a poll, and the polls don't look good.
You know, it's ironic, or I don't know if irony is the right term here, Matt. My understanding is Joe Biden has held the support of, let's call it, older people. And I'm not throwing you in that category.
Oof, you're hurting me,
But you know, you're beyond your 30s, let's just say. Joe Biden is really lost, and the polling has lost the support of the younger voters. But older voters were less supportive of Joe Biden out of the gate, but have held steady in their support of Joe. I think pragmatically, we're used to seeing presidents get elected, make big promises, and being able to deliver very little for the American people. And I don't think, you know, we look at the circumstances, hopefully pragmatically, and say, you know, considering Joe didn't do half bad. But that's not how young people are looking at this.
Yeah, I mean, canceling student debt would have been nice. Doing more on climate change would have been nice.
Matt Rothschild, my fine code devil for the hour. Come back with us. Phone lines open, 844-967-2789. It's a Tuesday.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
It was a beautiful day. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Tuesday edition. I got a fine code devil. He's my pal, Matt Rothschild, from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Got a little journalism in his background as well. Done a little bit of talking, heading around here. I appreciate when you come around, and we appreciate when you join the show by dialing 844-967-2789. Now, man, it's pretty early to say. But, you know, Tony Evers, all the Democrats, they're all worried about what's coming down the pike. Is it going to be a red wave? And this red wave, if anything, is reflective of the low approval rating of Joe Biden. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of like you, man. I wasn't enamored with the guy. Yeah, but I say not half bad. As far as presidents go, I wasn't enamored. Not after the governance of 8 years of Obama. Loved him as a candidate, you know, and he settled into mediocrity, as they often do. And he's still a lot better than most of them, but there's only so much you can do in this day and age. Politics has changed. The country is far too divided. But I don't know where the animus for Joe Biden comes from. I sat down for lunch with a couple of Republicans. Unfortunately, I went to a funeral yesterday, but I got to see some old college friends, and one of them and his brother sat down and we went to lunch and we talked politics the entire time, like long leisurely lunch. No one really wanted to get back on the road very bad, and lots of politics, and they're both Trump supportive. And I asked the boys, and where's the anger, where's this animus for Joe Biden coming from? I mean, they threw a couple of talking points at me, and they said they feel it. But I really didn't know, inspired by what? Inspired by what? You know, oh, his corruption was one of the things spouted back at me. Well, you know, look at Hunter Biden and da, 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 da. And man, it was, and I said, but do you have a qualm with Donald Trump's daughter and son-in-law working in the White House and making $630 million while they're on the supposed taxpayer dole, although apparently didn't take, you know, the job salary, you know, preferred the fringe benefits of access to the president, and selling that access is now some of the reporting is implying about Jared Kushner.
Getting perhaps, $2 billion from the Saudis.
Talking about his contacts, not his prowess as a financial manager, because he's not that good at that. But he's certainly connected to the right people. Well,
so what was
I don't
reaction?
Under,
what do you think that animus was coming from your friends?
Through disinformation on some level. Through disinformation. The only real takeaway I had from this conversation was they wanted more family values espoused. You know, it all comes back to the family values, Crudy. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. I said, you know, I had this conversation with Ron Johnson after he said, you know, it's not society's problem. It's your problem to raise your kid, right? And I got the same question for you boys who know me and have known me for 30 years. Here's my question. Same one I asked Ron. Well, I'm an orphan. What about me? Is that my parents' fault? You know, they died. So is society kicking me to the curb? Am I supposed to go be a homeless kid? Or is it possible that by providing a social safety net and giving me at least a fighting chance with public education and some Pell Grants to go to college, maybe I'll just turn into a productive member of society. Although I've certainly walked down a few bad paths as well.
And what did they say to that?
Oh, but you're the exception to the rule, Crudy. I'm like, no. I was a guy who was given an opportunity that my parents couldn't give me because they were dead. Or as far as I knew, apparently I got a DNA daddy. I didn't know it at the time. But, you know, lived 50 years of my life without the support of a dad. And the last 40 years of my life without the support of a mom. But I'm still out here living in society. And I said, so even if it's the parents' fault, let's blame it on the parents. I know we all like to blame ours, right? And our kids do the same. I said, but what are you basically dooming generations? You're dooming generations. You're writing off generations of people. If the parents are no good, well, screw the kids is basically the attitude. I'm like, but you also want something done about crime. You realize those same kids become perpetrators of crime, right? Or maybe you put a small investment into them. So if you want to talk about litigating or legislating family values, earned income tax credit, what do you think about that, boys? You know, not overly excited. I said, but, you know, all your logic, if that's what you're telling me is most important, give support, prop up the family. Well, you know what? I said, it's hard being poor. I said, it's been a long time for you guys, but do you remember what it's like being poor? When it's hard to keep the light bill on, and if your car breaks down, you're probably going to lose your job, and you can't afford to fix the car, and it spirals and it dominoes on you. I said, however, if you give those people a little bit of safety net, you give a little bit of a help. Well, and the one guy, and I'm almost done. And this is a friend of mine. I like this guy. But Brad says to me, yeah, well, you know, we lived in a 1,000-square-foot house growing up. Like, your dad was a CPA, and as his brother pointed out, yeah, mom had her master's. You might have lived modestly. You might have made smart, shrewd financial choices as a family. But as soon as you kids got done with college, I saw dad moved into the McMansion out in Brookfield. You know, so it's not like they didn't have a leg up societally. They had educational opportunities. They had opportunities presented to them just through the knowledge their mom and dad imparted on the household. But if you don't have that, do we give up on those people in society? And my answer is not from the progressive democratic point of view. I've done most of the talk, man. I'll give you a chance to.
Well, and it doesn't sound like they had a great answer or that they could really explain their animus. I don't really get the animus against Joe Biden either. I've got a neighbor who's got a Let's Go Brandon flag flying outside their house along with the Blue Lives Matter flag. And I don't know what's what's driving them either.
You don't live near Blaska, do you?
No. Does he have both those flying? Maybe he does. But, yeah, I mean, I can see people not liking the fact that their gas is costing a ton and that their food prices are up and things like that. But to hate this guy, I mean, he doesn't seem like a hateable guy, but there is all this energy of hatred toward Biden, which is certainly out there.
Do you think it's, and we're short on time here, Matt, and we'll come back with some phone calls, so maybe hold this thought, but do you think it's because we, the resistant left, were so reactive to Donald Trump? I know I was. Come back. We'll take your phone calls. Want to hear your thoughts as well. I got Matt Rothschild, Co Devlin, and you on the phones next at 844-967-2789. More Devils.
Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Tuesday edition. Got Evan here screening your calls lightly in Madison. I think Fancy Brand's going to jump on later with us. I got Matt Rothschild, Co Devlin, and I've got Shannon from Madison first up on the phones at 844-967-2789. Welcome, Shannon. Say hi to Matt.
Well, hi, Matt.
Hey, Shannon.
Okay, so I think there's a really simple answer as to why they hate Biden, and I think it's as simple as they're sore losers. You know, I mean, it's hard to find, like, level-headed, informed, patient, wise people in life in general, but I think it's really hard to find them on the Republican side right now, because so many of them have disassociated themselves at this point. So what's left are really the most immature, the least informed, the angriest. And they're angry, you know, that first they were angry about Obama, and Trump was kind of payback for that. And then Trump lost, and now this anger towards Obama and this fueling this great lie, I think it's just they're sore losers, and they can't take personal responsibility for that fact.
Shannon, weren't you – I made some radical life decisions after Donald Trump became the president. And I mean, radical. I sold a business, bought a radio station. I started making some big life choices.
Yeah, thanks for that. I appreciate that.
I would say perhaps an overreaction to the election of Donald Trump. But, you know, there are plenty that would say, well, Crudy, you just did that out of anger, out of spite, out of whatever. Did I, Shannon? I mean, you know, it certainly could be perceived that way. And
well, yeah, Crudy, and if you were angry, you had your identity. Every day Trump did something to drag the country down.
Shannon, I got to cut you off. I'm so sorry. Something happened with your phone there, and it really got bad. 844-967-2789. You know, if you got a good phone line, Wisco Paul, we'll keep talking for a bit. Say hi to my pal, Matt Rothschild. No, it's the phones. It's the phones. I'm not sure what's going on. I had to reset my computer here a little while ago, so I'm sure we might be having similar action with the phones. We'll get back to the phone lines a little bit later, perhaps, at 844-967-2789. I know the text line's still working, so text in. And, you know, Evan will share with me in. You know, if they're good, not you, George. I know some of you just like to troll in.
You know, Shannon called and said a lot we're sore losers. Certainly there are a bunch of Republican sore losers out there, and Trump is the biggest sore loser in the history of any competition there ever was. But I also think there are some Republicans out there and some independents out there who worry about Biden, worry about Biden's age, about his grip, whether he's still sharp or not. I know a lot.
But how many people said the same of Trump? And perhaps valid in both cases. But
maybe, but you know.
Wasn't that the left's criticism of Donald Trump?
Well, it was one of them. But, I mean, you know, Trump appeared sharp in those debates. Even, you know, when he was running for re-election, if he didn't act like such a jerk in that first debate against Biden, he might have, you know, been re-elected. And now I think Trump has lost a step or two also. But Biden, you know, he's just a little shaky up there. And, you know, we all saw the video of him shaking hands with a ghost when he was trying to finish up a talk he did a couple days ago. That didn't look good. I mean, he was made fun of on Saturday Night Live about it and on right-wing TV constantly. And it is a concern that people have, and maybe it's a legitimate concern. I don't know. But, you know, so it's not just they're all sore losers. I think that's an element on the far right, certainly.
Do you think the fact, and I'm sorry to interrupt, Matt, but do you think the fact that Donald Trump said it was rigged, I mean, he was setting the stage for calling it rigged, of course, beforehand, and then he said it was rigged, it was stolen, and the million of illegals that voted, and whatever his cockamamie explanations were, whether you believed them as a pragmatic lefty or not, of course, we didn't, because we said, well, that's not what the recount showed. That's not what the math shows. But if it was Barack Obama, I mean, just for example, just for theoreticals here, playing devil's advocate for a minute. If Barack Obama had been defeated by Mitt Romney, let's say, and said, it was stolen. There's no way I lost to that boring plastic man candidate. That was clearly a stolen election. They've rigged it against me. You don't think the Democratic supportive, the vast majority of Democratic, you know, voters would say, well, Obama said it was true. It's true. Now, Obama had a little better track record, let's say, than we perceive Trump to be. But it's no different, is it? If Obama said they stole it from me, I think I would have at least started from the premise it's a stolen election.
But would you keep up with that premise after you're 0 for 60 in the federal courts and after, you know, recount after recount?
I would demand evidence.
Well, and the evidence was non-existent. And so I hope that people, you know, who voted for Obama are more in the fact-based universe than the people who are still believing the lies that spill out of Trump's mouth, you know, when he says good morning.
Well, perhaps putting a bow on my conversation with Craig and Brad yesterday, that was my point. You're making assertions. You say it. Now support it. Where'd that come from? What's your source? And I guess that's something that I've never been afraid of, is to be contradicted and find out, oh, I had a bad source of information. Or when I read more or as new information has come to light, I'm not married to my old preconceived notion if it was wrong. And of course, when I'm argumentative, I mean, I've fought some emotional battles with Dominic on the radio, but with 24 hours, you know, thinking it over, I've never woken up the next morning and said, well, I'm wrong, but I'm strong and I'm going to keep fighting about this point. If you present evidence, I would hope most people's minds would be changed. And last thought
I'm still hoping to change some of those Republican minds too. I mean, I don't think all of them are totally stuck in cement. A bunch of them are, but not 100% of them.
What do you think of that study that came out about paying Fox News viewers to watch CNN? And that was very surprising to me, because once upon a time, and you know, I do this little radio show and I'm trying to appeal to 65%. And I just think, well, you know, there are the Trump supportive. I'm never going to get to them. I'm never going to win most of them over, or they wouldn't have voted for Trump. But I remember when Hillary Clinton called them deplorables back in 16, and we did a little exercise and I said, okay, I think you are deplorable, and call me, you know, not that there's any Trump supportive people listening right now, but call me and tell me why you're not. And we had 2 hours of solid phone calls of people saying, oh, I love you guys, but I'm going to vote for Trump. And I would not have guessed at the time that we had an appeal that, you know, they wanted to hear it both sides. Because I think, well, then how did you come to the conclusion to vote for Donald Trump? But I think that study demonstrates that there's more open-mindedness when you're presented with evidence and good sourcing. Even a Trump supporter can have their mind changed.
Yeah, this was like 30 days of watching CNN. They started to change their minds.
They started changing their minds on day three. It only took like 3 days of accurate representation and information. And it's not that CNN doesn't have any political bias. Certainly they're more left, but at least they lead with information that's predicated on source and fact. You know, they're not tanned testicles like Tucker over there. 844-967-2789. We're going to test out the phones. Wisco Paul, let's see how they sound now. Welcome back.
Hey, good afternoon.
Oh, much better, nice Paul. You're melodic. Nice you're radio sexy. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's always nice to listen to Matt's opinion. You know, the right-wing media is very, very powerful. They've got a good message, and they all stick to it. But I can't do nothing about the new maps, but I just want Matt's taking a couple of things. I really think Tony is well-positioned to get reelected as governor again. I think he's a fair-minded, and I think people are going to look at it as a check and balance. And the second thing, Matt, I, for one, do not want to see Joe Biden run again. He was a good placeholder, and he did way better than I thought, but he's just getting too old. And I'll just throw a name out there, because I don't know any Kennedys or Clintons that are in the bullpen here, but I would just throw a name out like the governor of California, Newsom. Somebody young, maybe inspirational.
Liberal West Coast elitist, Gavin Newsom, Paul? Are you sure you want to tag the man with that?
Well, I'm just looking for somebody young. It doesn't have to be him. I'm just looking for some young, just somebody, maybe in their 50s, your age, Cody. I just don't want to see any of these 60-plus-year-old guys.
Hey, man, it's been a long time since anyone called me young, Paul. appreciate the call. Eventually, there will be a passing of the torch. Maybe it'll be a Pete Buttigieg sort, although he's got his limitations as a politician as well. But, Matt, I would probably, and I disagree with you, Paul. I like you. But if the candidate was Bernie Sanders with the current cognitive abilities that Bernie shows at 80, I'd have zero qualms about a vibrant Bernie Sanders running for reelection. And I suspect his approval ratings would be a little higher, because I think he'd have done a better job of using the bully pulpit. But I'm not willing or quite ready to throw this guy overboard yet. I think it's a little too early for that. Now, if we have a disastrous midterms, if it's a red crushing wave on the beach, now does your buddy Obama call you up and say, hey, Joe, you know, you had a good run. You're forever known as the president. Let's call it one and done.
I heard that Obama urged him not to run last time around, actually.
If you believe some of the reporting early on, Obama was very supportive of Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
And that's another candidate, Elizabeth Warren. I was speaking about her outside to a friend of mine before, and I said, very dynamic candidate. If I could have picked and placed the president, it would have been Elizabeth Warren. Now, I supported Bernie Sanders mostly because of the 2016 run. I thought he was better positioned to win the nomination in 2020. You got to lose one to win one, I thought. I came around to Joe Biden when he eventually won the nomination. I voted for Joe, and I supported Joe. And I'm not ready to throw Joe overboard. There's nothing about his... It's been boring, and the accomplishments have been, you know, whatever. But so it's not a...
Not a great messenger. Not great message. And I just think people were sick of Trump. They wanted a breather from Trump. They got their breather. A lot of people aren't happy with what's going on. I think it'd be much better to have Elizabeth Warren run or Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, run. He's a good candidate, too.
That an admission of weakness on behalf of the Democrats? You got to run with the incumbent, man. You can't. I mean,
it's not a commandment. It's not necessary.
Is he in primary territory at this point? Can you see any Democrat? You know, I don't mean Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh, God.
I mean a Democrat like Bernie threaten to primary Obama in 2012. And I think in no small part, that's why Obama helped push Joe Biden. And a few of the candidates, I think Buttigieg got a call from Obama.
Yeah, I
think Amy Klobuchar got a call from Obama.
That was outrageous, too, I thought. I mean, let the people decide, not the kingmaker. And maybe we would have had a Bernie Sanders Trump matchup, and maybe Bernie would have been president today. So anyway, I thought that was disgraceful.
You understand that politics is also about personalities and egos. And when a guy says, maybe I should primary the incumbent president, well, the incumbent president may not have a personal affection for Bernie going forward.
I thought Bernie was right to consider primarying him too, because Obama wasn't acting like a progressive once he got into office. I mean, he let the bankers off the hook. You know, he's a Wall Street guy. There was reason for Bernie to stand on principle and say, maybe I should primary that guy. He's not going to primary Biden now.
No, Bernie wouldn't, but no. Could you see some young upstart? It's not going to be Kamala, but...
No, Biden would have to back out if there's a disaster in November. At some point, he's going to have to change his mind and not run for re-election. Then it's Kamala Harris, Sherrod Brown, Elizabeth Warren, Buttigieg.
Could you see the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling, especially, I believe it's Dobbs, the Roe v. Wade ruling, could you see that changing the entire dynamic of the midterms?
It could be, and here in Wisconsin, it would mean we'd have a law that was passed in 1849 outlawing abortion that would be the law of this state, if you can believe that. A law that was passed 50, 60 years before women even had the right to vote.
That's Matt Rothschild. He's my co-devil for the rest of the hour. Dial us, 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Tuesday edition. Got Evan lightly screening your calls, 844-967-2789. I got Matt Rothschild here for a bit longer, co-deviling with me. We'll take a few more calls in just a moment. But Matt, I want to ask you, you wrote an op-ed recently about the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the flip-flop of the Hagedorn, and the new ruling on the redistricting maps, the gerrymandered redistricting maps, and now the Republicans got their way.
Yeah,
your thoughts.
Yeah, this was just a disgraceful reversal by Justice Hagedorn, who had said in his first ruling about a month and a half ago that, look, we're going to take Governor Evers' maps, and I applauded him for doing that. And he said one of the reasons we're going to take Governor Evers' maps, he followed our instructions better than anybody else. We said least changes, which I thought was a terrible thing, least changes to the maps of 2011, which were rigged ridiculously by the Republicans. But that's what the conservatives, including Hagedorn, said that all the parties to the lawsuit had to do. And then Evers came through with a map that was accomplishing that goal better than even the Republicans did. He beat the Republicans at their own game. And then, of course, the Republicans, being bad losers, cried all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court sent it back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and scolded Hagedorn for writing a decision that didn't adequately explain the ins and outs of the Voting Rights Act, which I don't want to get into right now. And so what happened? Well, the Wisconsin Supreme Court had to decide what to do, and they had to decide by last Friday because candidates had to start putting in their nomination papers and had to know what districts they were in. But Hagedorn finally decided to go with his Republican colleagues 4-3 and actually accept the maps that the Republicans had introduced in the legislature that Evers had vetoed. This is a real separation of powers problem, and Justice Kurofsky in her dissent pointed it out. I mean, you can't have the Wisconsin Supreme Court act as though it's a body that can override a governor's veto and just pass the law that the Republicans weren't able to pass themselves in the legislature.
Well, that's an excellent point you make, and I'm not trying to defend Hagedorn's ruling, not the second one, certainly. But what option did the U.S. Supreme Court leave him when they said, we reject the Evers maps because you've misread the Voting Rights Act?
Well, they left him a lot of options. Actually, they didn't reject the Evers maps. They threw it back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and said, you didn't argue sufficiently or comprehensively about the Voting Rights Act to support.
But you kind of saw this coming when Evers wanted to send more information down, and they said no thanks.
Well, and that no thanks, Hagedorn had to sign on to that no thanks. Otherwise, the liberals would have said, yeah, please send us more. So that was Hagedorn's fault for not allowing Evers to send more information to the Wisconsin Supreme Court that might have said, yeah, here my maps are okay, and here's my here, let me show my work more and give you more argumentation. Or they could have hired an expert. A lot of courts do this during redistricting. Hire an expert, keep the Evers maps except for the Milwaukee area, have your expert draw the remaining districts around Milwaukee and call it a day. But they decided not to do that either. And so I think both the scolding from the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the really sarcastic and snarky criticism he got from his other Republican colleagues on the bench and the lack of time, he just kind of threw up his hands and threw in the towel.
844-967-2789. Taking some calls while there's time. Jackie from Milwaukee, say hi to Matt Rothschild.
Hi.
Hey, Jackie.
You know, I'm going back a little bit because I heard you talk about Bernie, and I'm probably on the wrong topic now.
That's fine.
It's okay. We're just talking here, Jackie.
Okay. I would love to see Bernie run again. I thought he'd be all burnt out by now, but he's not. And if he had, like, a female VP, he had a lot of votes. You know, we kind of did him in. The people, they didn't want him. Nobody wanted him, but the people did. About the Supreme Court, yeah, Wisconsin Supreme Court's a joke. I don't know. I don't even want to live in this state anymore. It's just getting destroyed. Republicans are running everything, and they're taking everything down. I mean, really.
Jackie, here's the good news. We could actually do something about the Wisconsin Supreme Court next spring. We can change the balance of the court for the better in next spring. And the last time this opportunity presented itself was the Lisa Neubauer-Hagedorn race. So we don't like Hagedorn's ruling in this case. I think he's shown himself to be something of a judicial independent. Certainly he's no Dan Kelly, who was the last Republican to lose overwhelmingly to Kurofsky. But let's not forget, Hagedorn only won his seat by 5,600 votes. That's the whole margin of the 4-3 Wisconsin Supreme Court. And next spring, we get a crack. I believe it's at Rogensack.
Rogensack's retiring. So the whole balance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court is up for grabs next spring.
Really?
And no incumbent.
Oh, my gosh. So no incumbent. So there needs to be somebody running again?
Against him? Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a good.
How do you find that?
I'm sure there'll be a good, very well qualified jurist who's going to run with some progressive credentials, and I don't know who's going to run on the other side, but I've got a hint that it might be.
Who do you think it's going to be?
It might be the guy who's running the circus that's never going to leave town.
Oh, you think Gableman's going to run again?
They run again.
Oh.
Oh, God. Well, thanks for the tip, because I can't wait to tell everybody, because this has got to change. This is getting ridiculous. People laugh at me. When I'm talking about people in other states, they laugh at the conditions here. It's just so ridiculous. And so, you know, Republicans, they just follow everything one Republican says. They all do the same thing, which is good for them in a way. At least Dems have a little bit of critical thinking, so that's not why we all go the same direction all the time, but we use our brain, you know. So,
sorry to cut you short, Jackie. I want to get to a few more calls, but yeah. But unfortunately, with the Democrats, it's herding cats. 844-967-2789. Another one from Milwaukee. PT, welcome back, PT. Say hi to Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, PT. Just, thanks for calling.
It was a very, yeah, sure. It was very interesting listening to Mel Barnes and the associate there talk about what the options are. And I think we do have some options. It's just not going to happen before the elections. But getting to Hagedorn, I think Hagedorn demonstrated his incompetence in sitting down and writing out a full explanation of why the Evers maps and why they expanded those black districts. Instead, he took the lazy man's way out and he said, oh, help me, dear justices, you know, and he went on their side. And they could have done this 2 weeks ago. Instead, they waited to the last day. It's disgraceful, and it showed his incompetence or his laziness and or his guts, really, in standing up for those Evers maps.
PT, I agree with you that he just kind of had a failing of guts, of courage here. I mean, he dilly-dallied around the whole, all the conservatives there waited and waited and waited for their decision two times here. But, you know, it's not over. I do think it's possible to sue under the Voting Rights Act to say that these maps violate the Voting Rights Act. And as Trudy was suggesting, if there's a different composition of the Wisconsin Supreme Court after next spring, we can bring the case back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and get better maps.
Yeah, but theoretically, even with the changing of the court's balance, that impaneling to the court doesn't happen until like end of July. in probability, if you're going to sue over these maps, A, you're going to miss this elective cycle, and B,